Conti, bella palla per Rebic, Rebic Ibra, Rebic, 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 il tiro, gol!
Hello everyone and welcome to another episode of the Sempre Milan podcast. I'm your host, Ollie Fisher, joined once again by Gian.
Hi guys, thanks for having me.
Yes, and we've got a very special guest with us. We thought we'd record a pre-derby preview because it's, I think we'll all be in agreement, it's like the biggest derby in about 10 years or so, even though there's no fans. But we've got Siavush Falahi with us.
Hi everyone, good to be here. Thanks for inviting me.
No problem, no problem at all. So, I'm nervous. We're recording this on Friday. Milan have just played in Belgrade and we drew 2-2 with Red Star. Europa League round of 32 first leg. It was going well until added time when 10-man Red Star equalised with a header. You know, we could have done with the morale-boosting victory, especially after we lost in the last game against Spezia in the league. Inter jumped above us in the table. Last weekend, because we lost to Spezia, they beat Lazio. That was a good performance against an informed team. How are you feeling going into this one?
I'm quite calm. I of course I think the nervousness will come in, you know, the closer you come to kickoff. But I'm quite calm in the way that I know Inter plays. I know it's a team that now feels very solid in defense. I know the players will be fresh. I know Inter always creates a lot of chances. I think Milan has managed to create a lot of problems for Inter this season in both games. But I'm quite confident with the way Inter is playing and performing football. Of course, it's a derby and, you know, in derbies everything can happen. It's a cliche, but it's very true. And as you said, it's the biggest derby in 10 years because you have the top two teams facing each other. So I will thoroughly enjoy it because I've seen so many bad derbies and I've seen so many, you know, seventh place against second place or fourth place against eighth place. You know, it's been so many bad players, so much bad quality. So, of course, there's no audience there, but I will really try to enjoy this game because I always thought that this is the greatest derby in the world and I continue to lobby that because no city has ever had the two teams that have won so much in Europe and in Italy. Of course, I like to shamelessly brag about Milan's CL titles when I can, but yeah, 36 titles between them, 10 combined CL. So yeah, it's for me, it's the biggest game in the world.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's probably, the biggest installment of it in many a year. Been so much mediocrity in this fixture, you know, but it feels like both clubs with their respective ownerships, even though there's a bit of speculation around Inter's owners at the moment, but it seems like we're on the right path, you know, with serious projects and stuff. And I think if before it might have been the eyes of Italy being glued to this game in the last few years, I think it's going to be the eyes of the world, you know, for the first time in a long time. It really does feel like there is a lot riding on this in terms of what happens with the Scudetto, but also, you know, nothing's really secured for us, for even for you guys, top four, you know. A collapse can never be far away. Before we move on to what to expect from Inter on Sunday, what do you think of the season that Milan have been having under Pioli? Obviously, a coach that you know well because actually a boyhood Inter fan and manage you guys as well. But do you think he's been doing a good job?
I'm one of you who thought he was doing a good job at Inter as well. I think that he came into a situation that was extremely difficult, took over a team that was very difficult to manage. He put on a very good row of victories at Inter and then the team lost the game and couldn't make, you know, top three or top four or whatever it was. And then the players just gave up on him and, you know, he got the stick and got to leave. But I'm one of few who think that he was actually a good coach back then and that he is kind of getting to show that now with Milan. And even if the good start was last season, right, nobody really considered that because he was going to leave. And I think that he can finally enjoy some of the good work that he's done this season. You know, even though the table is very short, you know, you can have 1 month of bad form and you're out of the top four. So we don't know yet how it will go for Milan and how we will evaluate Pioli's job. It's just interesting to look back a year Because if we look back a year, even with Zlatan, nobody would have thought that Milan would have been in a Scudetto battle or a top four battle. And I think that says a lot about Pioli's job, because he's also, together with the directors, getting a type of player that is very interesting. You know, it's young players, quick players, technical players, running players. Until the last month, I think that Milan has played very good football, which is enjoyable to watch. I think Pioli has done a good job in intensifying the pressure, intensifying the counterattacks, the amount of players who actually attack. I don't think Milan is the best playing side, seeing the quality of chances and the amount of chances, but I think they have a very solid performance base. And I think Pioli must be praised for the job that he's done, because the situation he was in with the ownership, you know, maybe going for Rangnick and Boban leaving because of that, and Maldini not being happy with the situation, it's very difficult for a coach to have. So I think he's done an amazing job. But in the end, we will evaluate him harshly, as we do with all coaches, in the end of the season. Because if he would fall out of, you know, top four, people would see that as a failure, even though in my opinion it isn't, because nobody would have thought Milan was a top four team before the season except Milan themselves. So I think he's done a great job. I think Milan are an exciting team to watch. I think he's given credibility to the youth project, because if Milan was in 12th place now, everyone would be saying, why are we signing all these young players? You know, get in some experienced players. We can't do this. But he's given credibility to the project, and that's extremely important.
Mm. And speaking of the experienced players that we brought in, you mentioned the impact that Ibrahimovic has had, as well as Pioli, obviously. It's like having two head coaches. That's what keeps being said, because of the mentality, the leadership, the experience that Zlatan brings. Somebody who's met him, knows him sort of semi-personally, I would say. What's Ibra like, and do you think that he deserves like 50% of the credit for what's gone on?
Yeah, absolutely. I think this Zlatan is a different Zlatan, because Zlatan's always been a superior type of player. He's always been he's always spoken his mind. He's never been afraid of, you know, telling someone they made a bad pass or bad decision. And in teams where players are already ready to win, that's probably going to make you win, right? But at a team like Milan with young players, it could have went incredibly wrong, right? But I think since Zlatan came, he's shown the young players what you need to be on top. And he's shown the young players that if I can do this at 39, there's no excuse for you guys not to do it at, you know, 20, 23, 24, 25, 18, 19. So I think Pioli said that before Zlatan came, that it's, if you have Zlatan on the training ground, it's difficult to not train well, because he'll let you know. So I think he obviously upped the level very much since he came. I never thought he would have had this effect on the group. I never thought I think he's not only had a big impact on the young players, but I think Calhanoglu, for example, since Zlatan came, has been a totally different player. I think Kessié has taken steps into becoming the midfielder everyone thought he could be. So there are a lot of players we can mention, like Rebic as well, but you know, I think Calhanoglu especially has proven to be a top player. And I don't think that would have happened if it wasn't for Zlatan. So obviously that impact, I didn't expect that. You know, I am a big fan of Zlatan. He's a great guy. He can seem very arrogant and rough and hard, but that's on the field. He's also a very funny guy. I think the Milan players will know that. And I think if he eventually leaves Milan at a stage, there will be many guys saying, we had a lot of fun with Zlatan. He's a funny guy. He jokes around. He messes around. But when he's on that field, it's a 90-minute war. And when he's on the training field, it's a 60-minute training session war. And if you're having a training match against Zlatan, that is not a training match. That is life or death. So yeah, that's the way he is. And I think that, you know, changed the mentality of this group, because they saw what you need, they saw what you need to do. And when you have that, it also becomes easier. If you train like that, it's easier to play like that, especially when there is no audience. If you have the audience there, you know, the young players might feel a bit pressure and, you know, might get affected. There's a bit more difficult. It's more adrenaline. It makes you do things you might not do. But now you go out to the stadium, no audience, no away audience. You do the things that you did in training. And I think that's Zlatan's impact. But he's a very funny guy, very, you know, jokingly and, you know, charismatic. He's a very big star. And when I met him, I got to see that, because I've always thought he was a bit arrogant. But I honestly don't have a problem with it, because he is who he is. I kind of can accept Zlatan being arrogant, because he's done what he's done, and, you know, but he is very funny. He's very down to earth, normal kind of guy. So I think he's very appreciated by his teammates and his coach.
So from the outside looking in, obviously Ibrahimovic is off to this San Remo festival, and then you've got Gigio and Hakan not renewing. You've got questions about the captaincy of Romagnoli. As an Inter fan, how does that look to you? Does it look like Milan is starting to deteriorate a bit, the ticking time bomb, and the match on Sunday could put, like, not a nail in the coffin, but certainly push towards that way?
Yeah, I think that's the way this derby should be seen. I think, so, you know, the media and the newspapers, they will always draw this up as a Scudetto battle, but there are too many points in the league left to say that straight away. But I'm confident that if Inter wins the derby, they'll get a good enough boost to go on to win the league, because then they'll have, within a month, beaten Milan, beaten Juventus, beaten Lazio. I think it's a signal not to Inter so much, but to the rest of the teams, that this team is here to, you know, to do their best. I think Milan has a big risk in this game. And I think Milan has more to lose than Inter in this game, because, as you said, if Milan were to lose, it will very quickly become, you know, 2021. I think you go up to 5 losses. If they lose the derby, that's more than they did in, you know, almost a year before. I think the renewals are not such a big talking point, because we don't really know what's going on. I mean, Gigio, of course, it's a big player. Hakan is a very big player. But that, if they want to stay, they will stay. If they don't want to stay, they'll go. It's not more difficult than that. I think the ticking bomb here is if Milan plays badly result-wise and Zlatan goes to Sanremo and that continues. Because that's going to create a lot of controversy. And that's not going to send the right signals either to the fans, because when Zlatan is at Sanremo, he is there to be charismatic, funny, light. You know, he's not there to be angry because they lost the last game. So I think that's a mistake. You know, I think Ibra does a bit what he wants, right? But I think this is a mistake. And at Milan, they surely don't want to make Zlatan angry or feel like, you know, he can't do stuff like this. But it's so easy to do it when it goes well, because nobody will care. It's very tough to do it when things go bad and if you lose games, because then it's not good TV. It's not good PR. There's a lot of questions, you know, and it's not only questions to Zlatan. They will bombard his teammates. Hey, what do you think about Zlatan going, you know? So that's a big risk, and I'm quite surprised. And also, I think, combined with the fact that he might be called up for the national team very soon, it can be a lot of things in a short time that won't make him look very good at Milan. And I know for a fact that Milan are, you know, they're not very happy with the fact that he might go to the national team. Of course, he's 40 years old almost. He has to play 2 more games instead of, you know, resting like he did before the last derby. So there's a lot of question marks. And we also have to, remember that last derby, he took a red card that I've never seen him do that in the last 10 years. A very unnecessary card, which put his teammates in trouble. So some, Zlatan will, of course, when these speculations rise and a lot of people talk bad about him, he always rises up and shuts everyone down. But if that wouldn't happen, it's a big risk for Milan as team for their season.
I think that what we've seen this season is that when there's been a big game upcoming for Milan, there's been quite a lot of negative press surrounding us. So, for example, an article's come out today about Gigio's Raiola wanting a release clause for Gigio, and of course it comes a couple of days before a huge game. There's always something in the media that's trying to destabilise basically anyone who's a threat to Juve, because we know what that's like. And the San Remo thing has a real potential to be very sour, whereas the possible benefits of it are none for us as a club.
Like, yeah, for Milan, it's nothing.
It's PR exercise.
It's kind of looking like Zlatan's bigger than the club, and it's more about Zlatan than it is about Milan. And in our most important season, most important period in the last 10 years, and he's swanning off to the festival, the youngsters are going to be looking at that thinking, can we do that? Can we go off and do stuff if he can? And it's not a good look for us.
So the only good thing there is that they actually know that they can't, because they're not Zlatan. But I agree. If it would have been, anyone else, they'd probably say, if they do that, we could do that as well. But if it's Zlatan, I think they're quite okay. But with the rest, it's 100% true, because, as you said, the benefits for Milan as club, even if Zlatan goes and says Forza Milan and does a live tattoo which says Milan, I love you, is not so much good stuff coming out of that for Milan. And it's a big risk. It's a big risk for the club,
There has been speculation that we knew about it when we... Because the rumour is that it was all agreed back in March, and we knew about it when we were offering him his renewal and when he signed it. However, something tells me that it might change. Like, there was a report that came out this morning saying that he'll only actually be there for the first night or the last night, and that the rest of him he'll video in. But we don't know what's going to happen. But yeah, I think
it's likely that they are flexible if the results go bad. Because anything else would be not so intelligent. As I said, if they go on to lose before and after, I have a hard time seeing him stay. And then the video call probably makes sense, because I thought he'd do back and forth, but he actually stayed there the whole week. And that's not, and if they promise that in the renewal, of course, this is a marketing activity. This is something that's probably worth a big load of money and PR. And if that somehow made, the contract negotiations easier, it might have been worth it, right? But it's easier to talk about it and sign the contract 6 months ago. And then when it actually comes to happen, it's still a bit more difficult to look at.
We've also got a game smack bang in the middle. We've got Udinese at home.
But that could get rearranged, couldn't it, if we go into Europe?
Is it bad that I don't want it to be rearranged. Like, I kind of want us to face up to the consequences of this whole thing. But we'll see. I've got a feeling that might change. Anyway, back to the derby. How big do you think last weekend was? Obviously, Milan have been top of the table pretty much from the first round up until last weekend. And we slipped up against a team that a lot of people backed us to win, even though Spezia have been impressive this season so far. And you beat the most informed team in the league in Lazio to overtake us. Do you think that that might be the passing of the baton almost, and we might not get top spot back?
I think Spezia is a good team. I have to say that. I think it was the losing against Spezia wasn't for me such a big thing. I think the way Milan lost was the bigger thing, that they were, totally out of the game, totally outplayed, didn't create any good chances, more or less, if it wasn't for set pieces. So doing that, was Inter goes on and beats Lazio, that has 6 wins in a row, of course, can look like, the the dagger, you know, the passing and what will show the way. I think the start of Inter's period is longer before that. I think the Juventus game for Inter was big, you know. Inter lost against Sampdoria. They lost points against Udinese. They did some, you know, bad results in January. But winning against Juve for Inter in the way Inter did, I think that gave the players kind of a, you know, the confidence that they can beat anyone. Yeah. And that Juve is the best team, you know. So I think it started with that. And I think the derby in the cup was also very important because, you know, I think Zlatan and Lukaku exaggerated very much in their situation. But I think the fact that Lukaku, you know, took a battle like that and that the team was behind them and that, you know, Conte got red carded before that. You know, the fact that some of these players and coaches are starting to burn again, you know, to start to, even though I think it's wrong, but, you know, I appreciate Zlatan if I'm a Milan fan, if Romagnoli is attacked and, you know, it's a bit of fuss. I appreciate a player, you know, backing his captain and backing his teammates. The same way I appreciate Lukaku standing up to Zlatan, even if it then, of course, went too far. I appreciate to see that from a player that shows we're not here to take shit, you know. As I said before about Zlatan, on the field, it's a war. Afterwards, we can hug. So I think that game and that situation were crucial for Inter to show that this group is very solid. And for the first time in, you know, so many years, no player left, no rumors about contracts, no rumors about signings or not signings. You're going to be sold or loaned out, nothing. This group is the group that it is. The coach is who he is. The owners can be whoever you want, but the group is extremely solid. So I think more than last weekend, this positive feeling about Inter has been the last few weeks, because I think when Inter went down to Milan in the Cup Derby and in the Cup against Juventus, I think they showed some really good football after that. Of course, then Zlatan got the red card, so it kind of maximized. But the reaction of the team when they let a goal in before has been, you know, it's killed Inter. Same thing with Lazio in the weekend. So if we isolate, you know, the results, which of course was Inter went past Milan, if we look at it that Inter let in a goal out of nothing at 2-0 and scored 3-1 5 minutes after, that's the important thing for me. And also that's the most important thing with the Spezia game for Milan. It's not the result. It's the way it came. Being totally outplayed, no chances, you know, well-deservedly losing. I think that's what's worrying more than results. So this derby will be important that way, because if Inter wins, Milan might have went into the Spezia game thinking, oh, we'll beat Spezia, and then Inter might drop points and will, you know, be 5 or 6 or 8 points forward. And now we find ourselves four points behind. You know, that's the crucial point of this derby. So I think the positive form for Inter is based on other things than last week. And the negative things for Milan is based on other things than the result, the way they played.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and you know what they say about the derby going against form. I hope that's right this time.
Well, you look at it at the start of the season, we went into the derby 2 points clear. Yeah. And Inter were kind of having the bad run of form at the start of the season, I suppose you could say, being 2 points behind. So it'll be interesting to see how it flips this time, if Inter can capitalise or if they do actually drop. The out-of-form team takes over.
Yeah. And I think the first derby of the season, Conte was mixed, you know, experimenting with his very offensive football, the one-against-one situations. The national team break before is, of course, bad for Milan as well, but Inter has a lot of South Americans that, you know, travel to Chile or Argentina. They have 12, 15-hour trips. For example, the players that stayed, like Zlatan stayed, but he had COVID 2 weeks before. Mm-hmm. It was fresh, whilst, you know, Inter had Ashley Young and Gagliardini that, you know, they might be reserves, but if they are fresh for 2 weeks, they're going to start the derby, because after the national team break, everyone is just finished. Mm. So I think a lot of things change, and I think that's interesting to see, because some of the players, of course, traveled to Belgrade, played in the game. I think Zlatan and KC probably they rested, right?
So yeah, didn't play.
So I think, and some of the Kjær as well. So some of the players that are key in Milan rested, and I think, you know, on this level you must be able to do three games a week, but still going on the trip, coming back on the Thursday night, you know, when could they have been home at 12 or 1 or 2 in the morning? No training session before Friday, you know, afternoon. It still takes a lot of energy. And then when you don't get the result as well, it's just, you feel like, oh, this was some wasted hours we had here. So I think that's going to have an effect as well, especially since Inter had 1 week's rest. So I think Inter has to be the team that's going to take, you know, commando. And I think Milan, even though Zlatan and KC will be fresh, they will be a bit more laid back in the beginning.
It was interesting because when we got knocked out of the cup in the quarterfinal, we were told it was going to be a blessing for us because we'd then have 2 weeks without midweek games. And then we rocked up to Spezia and put in an absolute horror show. So I think sometimes you can get out of a rhythm. But you're right, travelling to Belgrade on a Thursday night, and there were some rumours that we stayed over last night and that we travelled back this morning, which I think would have actually been wise. But,
It all depends on how you train the day after. You know, mm-hmm. some just prefer to go back straight away and train in, you know, a bit later. Some say, no, it's better if we sleep and recover at the hotel and then we take the next day back and train straight away. You know, I'm not a doctor or a football coach, but if they make a decision like that, it has to make sense, because Europa League is okay when you play at home. Like, for example, this week coming up, it's easier because you have the derby on Sunday and then you have Europa League at home, so you don't travel, and then you have another game on Sunday, which can, of course, be a travel or something, but it's within Italy, so usually okay. But I think that effect on teams is underrated, because of course, if you win, that might help to keep on winning. But we must consider Europa League. I work with it. We have had the rights for many years. But, you know, until you come to the quarter or semi-final against the big teams, it is a bit of a headache. And you get injuries like Bennacer yesterday. It's not only because of the game, of course, but it's still, you know, feeling unfortunate for a game that it's not probably the most important of the season.
Mm. Yeah, that's the thing about the Europa League for us as well, is that it has come this game against a tough, plucky opponent, you know, one that we've got history against, and it's come with the two legs either side of Inter, and then we've got a trip to Roma, you know, in the next round. So that's going to be tough.
If we were good to thing lose, Roma is playing Europa League as well.
Yeah, but I mean, if we were to go to Roma and lose, you know, after not convincing in the second leg, and we might lose to you guys on Sunday, it would become quite tough then, I think, to get back on course. Team news, who's out for Inter? What do you think your starting 11 will be?
I think it's going to be the same 11 as against Lazio. So it's Handanovic, it's Bastoni, De Vrij and Skriniar, it's Hakimi, Barella, Brozovic, Eriksen, Perisic, and then you have Lukaku, Lautaro on top. I think the only doubt would be Eriksen or Vidal, because Vidal is coming back from an injury, and of course you have Ashley Young and Darmian who can play on the left wing. But I think Perisic is Perisic is good on his head, and I think Milan usually tries to find Zlatan on the far post, and Perisic is doing quite well the last few games. I don't think he'll necessarily beat Zlatan in an aerial duel, but I think he's physically a good player to have because he can also push forward. So I think those are the players. And I think Eriksen has done well the last few games in his new position. I think that they will continue with that, because if the game is as I think it's going to be, with Inter dominating possession and trying to attack from the beginning, you will need someone who has a good shot and a good foot to kind of, you know, get the thing that Hakan is good at Milan, to find the passes into the final third, into the penalty box, the shots, the corners. So that's an extra weapon. And
free
I think
kicks.
That's Yeah, I think that Conte can't kind of ignore that. But if he goes for Vidal, it's going to be because, well, with Bennacer out, you have Kessié, and if it's Mete, you have a very physical and strong midfield. Even if it's Tonali, you have a fast, you know, guy who can go in the break. So if you go for Vidal, it's because you expect a more intensive, you know, fighting duel game. And if you go for Eriksen, you expect to dominate it. So that's the only doubt.
Yeah, it's the midfield that worries me. Obviously, you went into that Lazio game with, I think it was Bastoni, Barella, and Brozovic, who were all at risk of being suspended, and none of them got suspended. So
that they've was been. I think they've been risking that suspension for 1.5 months. So I'm kind of expecting Barella to get a yellow within 7 minutes or something like that, because he hasn't fulfilled a tackle for, you know, a month, and that's, you know, Brozovic usually doesn't get, you know, the kind of yellow cards for ugly things. He kind of takes the tactical ones, but Barella is just a lot of energy and takes a lot of yellow cards. And so I think more than them now, it's actually Lukaku has been added to the list and someone else that I can't remember. So it's actually five players now that are one card away from suspension. So we could like face the next team with half our team gone. But I think they did extremely well to go through such a long period without making fouls that could have led to suspension.
They did, because we had Calabria, who was at risk, and he basically deliberately got a booking in the Crotone game. He called the guy down on the break, and I put
he
money on
so
it.
So happy!
I put money on it because I knew it was going to happen. And then, 83rd minute, he just ragged someone down to get his yellow card, which was great. But then, hopefully him coming back is a big thing. What I'm worried about, because I've got this feeling that Pioli's going to start Rafael Leão because of how he performed in the first league derby, which was the one where obviously he found a lot of space, he found a lot of attacking freedom, and he provided the assist for the 2-0 goal. I think he should play Rebic. I'm worried about Hakimi again because Teo can't really defend in isolation, and he's going to start Romagnoli, and Romagnoli's out of form. He's low on confidence. So if I was speaking to Conte and, well, if I was an Inter fan, I would speak to Conte, I'd be saying attack that left side of our defence because there appears to be a lot of holes. What that might end up doing is opening up space on the other side. I think Kessié will start on sort of the left side of defence in midfield to try and cover that area. And that might leave Tonali a bit exposed. So there's plenty of stuff to worry about. And also, must mention the fact that when we played you twice already this season, I think Kolarov started both games in the back three. And Zlatan had a lot of joy against him, basically individually. That ain't happening this time.
I think Zlatan, even if Bastoni plays, Zlatan dominates Bastoni physically and aerially. The only thing with Bastoni is that he has a body type, you know, that it's big. Mm. So if they go up in a duel, even if Zlatan wins it, it's not going to be as easy against Kolarov. I think that right side thing is very interesting because Inter builds a lot of their game with Barella and Hakimi on that side and Skriniar. And they just, you know, switch positions and put the ball into, you know, space. And I tweeted it last day, and I think this Romagnoli thing, I think he has been better this season than last season. But I think he gets exposed when... So I think Milan this season, right, they've improved and they've taken a step to be a team that they haven't been before. And I think while Milan has taken one or two steps forward, that's left some players behind. And I think Romagnoli is one of those because he was very good in that Gattuso low line, low back line system where he can be, you know, traditional Italian defender. Now Milan wants to be a top team, an attacking top team, a team that leaves some space behind, you know, a team that kind of attacks more. And as soon as Romagnoli has some space behind him, you know, between him and the goal, he's not so solid because he's not so fast. Mm-hmm. And I think that will represent a problem for Milan going forward because he's the captain, but Tomori has physicality and speed. He's very fast. Mm-hmm. And I think Inter, if you look at Inter's back three, Skriniar is extremely fast. He's one of the fastest defenders in the league. De Vrij is probably a bit slower, but he's still okay. Bastoni is good in the pace. So I think that's a big risk. And I saw the Juve game against Milan. They only exposed that side. Mm-hmm. They exposed Theo and they exposed Romagnoli not being able to cover. And I think Hakimi is very good at that, because the difference when Hakimi goes forward is that Skriniar is always there behind him, right? But when Theo goes forward, he has to have Romagnoli, and then you know you have to take one of the midfielders. So that's a big risk for any team that faces Inter, because I don't think Inter will revolutionize anything. You know, Inter plays the way they play, no matter who it is against. Only difference is sometimes you manage to do it better and sometimes you do it worse. And I think even the first derby where Inter lost, I think they created good enough of chances to get a draw. A lot of big chances that they missed. I think they conceded too much in defense. And if we look at the Cup derby, which I think is a more likely match, you know, the type of match, I think Inter lets in a goal that Zlatan scores, which is, if we look at expected goals, you know, it's a very difficult goal to score. So Inter is not giving the same amount of big chances to teams. And that's going to be where Zlatan has to make the difference for Milan.
Mm. Yeah, the Romagnoli thing is basically like exactly what I wrote a feature this week, basically saying exactly what you've just said there. And I come to the conclusion that the best solution for us is, if you can't bench Romagnoli, you need to find a way to have someone partnering him who's going to cover him and going to bring the best out of him. And it's never going to happen, but that is probably to move him across, because Calabria tends to pick and choose his moments when he goes forward a lot more than Theo does. But everything, like the stats, the metrics, when you look at it just with the naked eye, seems to suggest that Kier Tomori would be a much better pairing, but it sends a bad message when you bench your captain. So I think you're also right about us growing and leaving him behind also, a little bit.
Coaches love left foot players.
They do.
You know, I think he's quite poor in build-up, Romagnoli. I think he doesn't have a good left foot. But coaches these days, they love their left foot players. And it's kind of an obsession, because having left-footed CBs mean you can have one left foot and one right foot. And it's kind of a trend in football Europe now. But that's also, you know, a big reason that he's where he is.
I think it's Gurley's biggest dilemma coming into the derby is, do you drop Romagnoli? Because Tomori, when he came on in the derby for Kier, them two together was fantastic. So do you go into it with actually Tomori and Romagnoli? Because Kier's unfit. And if you bring him off after, say, 20 minutes, if he picks up an injury, that's going to be more difficult throwing Tomori into such a big game. Mm. So I think his biggest dilemma is, I think Tomori has to start, but I think he needs to decide who it's between. Does he drop Romagnoli? Does he play Kier? But Tomori's physicality, athleticism, it makes him a starter in a big game like this.
It's also because Lukaku is difficult to play against if you're not going to get physical. Like, he's obviously going to beat you or turn up once or twice or three times, you know, no matter what you do. But Tomori was very good at that, I think. Like, so I think that's one of the best signings in the last few years, because you need fast-paced CBs, and obviously Kier is getting older, and I don't think in 2 years he'll be a starter at Milan probably. But it's interesting if he wants and dares to make that decision for a game like this, you know, because I think it would make sense, but it's very difficult to do, because then you kind of, you know, the balance of the locker room and the starters not being starters can create a lot of problems. But it would be courageous, and I think also the right move to do.
Yeah, I think he's got it difficult whichever way he goes, because if he drops one of Romagnoli and Kier for Tomori and it works, then he'll get a lot of praise. But like you said, it's going to be bad for the morale in the dressing room that you start one of your starts or your captain's being dropped. But if he just plays it safe with Kier and Romagnoli and he leaves out our most informed defender, he's going to get a lot of stick for that too, and questions are going to then start being asked if it doesn't work out. So he has got a difficult job on.
I wonder if this is almost like a last test for Romagnoli. You know, this is biggest game for years in the grand scheme of things with the club. And if he doesn't show up again, you know, because we've seen him be dominated by Lukaku on a couple of occasions already. If he doesn't show up now, might that be it? You know, he's lost faith for good.
Yeah.
We'll see.
But it's not just stepping up in a game like this. He's a captain, so he needs to step up. It's not just your average player that needs to have a good game to prove himself. He's your captain, so he should be the one that's taking this game by the scruff of his neck. And
he's never been a vocal leader. The thing is, he should be leading by example with performances. And when we've been crap, like 3-4 years ago, you know, he stood out because he was just above average and we were used to so much worse. But yeah, I don't know. Right, we'll move on to a couple of questions then, and then we'll do a prediction. Someone's come after you here, and a guy called CTK says, "See, you told me Milan will not finish in the top four. Do you stand by this claim?" So that, whoever that is, does not forget.
Yeah, so that's the thing with predictions. You know, before a season, everyone always tells you predict, and then you end up predicting shit every year, and no one kind of holds you accountable for it. Yeah. So I kind of appreciate someone calling me out, because I've been very clear before the season that we still had to doubt Milan, because, you know, what we saw was probably, you know, based on the virus and the football they played. And I still think that it sounds ridiculous after 6 months, but we still have to see how Milan copes with the European games now, and, you know, facing teams that have gone 1 week without resting, you know, facing Spezia's, facing, you know, the Hellas Verona that will just come at you and run 15 kilometers per players. During the season, I've said that Milan deserved leading the league, and I stick to that. If they will finish top four, it's difficult to say, I think. Depends on the derby. If they get a good result, I'll say yes. If they get a bad result, I will say that they will fix fourth place in, you know, the last one or two rounds, because it's going to be very tight. And only reason why I trust Milan to still get that done if they would lose the derby is Zlatan. Mm. Because I think he makes a very big difference, you know, in against the small teams and the big teams and any team, and keeping it up is his thing. So I'm going to adjust to saying if they get a good result in derby, yes. Otherwise, they will put it at risk.
Yeah, I would agree with that. The thing is, we've been leading the league for so long, and then you look at it and we are a couple of bad results away from being, you know, back in there. Are we even going to get top four? And that was the mission at the start of the season, it must be said. Nobody actually thought, despite our form after lockdown, that we were going to go on and challenge for the league. And that's what we're doing, you know. Regardless of if we fall away, we've challenged until now. Yeah. But the mission is still top four, because financially for the club to be back in the elite competition, to be in the Champions League, is just too big. I'd sign Milan, for it now. You know?
Milan, just as Inter, you know, have Champions League in the DNA. And I'm not talking about winning the titles, of course. I mean, you know, playing in the Champions League for clubs like Milan and Inter is, you know, normal, being back to normal. And it's been so many years when Inter didn't play Champions League that things weren't normal. You know, the money wasn't coming in, the good players weren't coming in, you didn't get the one or two or three, four or five nights at San Siro where you have 80,000 going against a big team. Now, of course, Inter has been knocked out badly the last 3 years, but they've cashed in, you know, 150 million euros to that. So I know a lot of rival fans laugh at Inter for that, and I'm totally fine with that. But in the end of the day, Inter, you know, takes a check to the bank and says, "Hello, UEFA, give us 50 million euros because we participated." And for a club like Milan, and Inter, and every club, but mostly Inter, Juventus, and Milan, because even Juventus can miss out on Champions League this year, right? But for Milan to really return, like, if we just skip thinking about winning the league, making the Champions League is a way of finding your DNA again. Like, I spoke a lot about that with Liverpool and Jurgen Klopp, you know, when they weren't winning titles, but they were playing great football. They were back in the Champions League. They were, you know, finding what made them great again. And that's what Milan and Inter need to do. Inter kind of found it because they made Champions League a couple of years. I think if they went for European final last year, lost it, but still, you know, they were competing for things that their history suggests they should compete for. And that's exactly the same thing with Milan, because when I'm confident that when Milan makes the Champions League again, that's going to turn things around in order of stability, ambition of being what Milan should be.
It's like retracing steps, yeah. Isn't it? You know, it's like going back on that journey to find yourself. It's like something out of a movie.
Because both Inter and Milan were hit so badly by financial fair play. Both Inter and Milan were hit so badly by two big owners leaving the club in quite a gigantic mess. I mean, Inter went like 7 years of settlement agreements, not being able to sign better players or more expensive players. And how are you supposed to, you know, if you can't do anything, how are you supposed to get back into the Champions League again? I mean, of course, the projects should have been better, which is the same for Milan, you know. But if you can't do anything, if you can't even risk, how would you, you know, go on to do something good? So I think UEFA, same thing with Roma. They've had to sell, you know, Salah, Pjanic, all great players that they would have kept if it wasn't for the financial fair play. But Italian clubs have been very, very badly treated in this sense.
I don't agree with the way that financial fair play operates, to be honest, because it doesn't seem to actually, you know, serve its purpose. I mean, we
were richer.
Exactly,
and,
The
league's less even than ever before. I think basically, only the Premier League survived.
Yeah, but and
Italy,
and
Germany, the Champions League, you know, it's 4 or 5 teams, same ones, same biggest teams, you know. I think the idea was good, but it's turned out to, you know, just suit the already very wealthy clubs, and it's made them even more wealthy.
And if you sign a settlement agreement like what we've had to do, you basically have to become another Atalanta, where you just get lucky with like Moneyball, and you can't really buy any expensive players, and you just have to wing it. Like when in that Gattuso season, when we had the new ownership, we spent the money on Piontek and Paqueta, and we thought, right, this is it. We're gonna risk it. We're gonna spend 70 million combined. Bring these two guys in, and we'll be able to go to UEFA and say, look, we got top four, so our books look better. And it didn't happen, and we got screwed for it.
And Inter did the same with João Mario and Gabigol.
Oh, yeah.
And Candreva, which was like 100 million euros for nothing. Just messed the club up for the coming year. I'm glad Suning learned after that, because after that they've signed good players, good prices. But that one, like, you know, one a year messed so many years to come.
We got a question from Lucas. People might not know, but you have pretty strong opinions on Samir Handanovic. I want you to outline your agenda, but then Lucas asks, who's an avid listener of the show, to be fair. So props to him for asking this. But who would you want to succeed him?
Donnarumma.
Antonio.
if I could dream, it would be him. But yeah, I don't think it will ever happen. I think the likely guy is, you know, someone like Musso or Golini at Atalanta. That's probably what they're going for. Knows the language, knows the league. I like Golini because he's played Champions League, and I think for goalkeepers to have done that is crucial in their way of handling pressure and the big stage. So those are, I'd love to go for some hot young name from Germany or Spain, or, you know, a top 5 or 7 side, you know, that you can go and get. But I don't think the finances are there. But I'm quite okay with Musso. I think he has everything to take the next step. He has a good age, you know. Only Donnarumma is 22 years old and as good as he is. The rest of the top keepers are all, you know, 25 to 35. So I'm quite fine no matter who comes. My problem with Handanovic has been, I think I've rated him less than the average Inter fan did. And in the beginning, that got me a lot of stick because people didn't see what I was coming at. And I was at a lot of games. I used to average 10 to 15 games at the stadium. And I think I based a lot of my criticism on the feeling that Handanovic had no control or presence whatsoever in the penalty area. I think he wasn't, not charismatic, but he didn't have enough authority in the penalty area. I think my very early criticism was against the rebounds that he left, that they always went out centrally and never to the side. I think that's a, you know, step one, the goalkeepers is always, if you can't grab it, push it out to the corner. Mm-hmm. And he had this habit of pushing out straight into the box. And I think the last few seasons, there's a lot of people who blame him for the same things, because he doesn't always move either. And I really couldn't mind a player not moving on, you know, when he can't save. But if you never react, you're never going to try. You're never going to pull off that miraculous one time you actually reach the ball, you know. And so I think if he tries, he can save. But yeah, so that was more or less that. But it's become a bit exaggerated with because now as soon as he makes a save, I have like 20 mentions. Hey, what do you think about Handanovic now? And as soon as he makes a mistake, I have like 50 mentions saying,
yeah.
Oh, you're right. This guy, he needs to go. Also, I don't like having my captain in goal.
Hmm.
Because, you know, something happens out on the field. There was a game this season that Oriali stepped into the field to calm someone down. I think it was Barella.
Yeah.
But, you know, when Vidal goes and gets a red card against Real Madrid in the league, you have your captain 60 meters from there. I don't really like that. Because if you have a midfielder out there who takes the discussion with the referee, then, you know, Vidal might not need to get angry and get a red card. And I know now Donnarumma can become a captain at Milan probably if he stays and if things go well. But I see him more as a leader than Handanovic, because I listen to the games and I hear Donnarumma speak all the game. I barely hear Samir speak or get out in the way that he should. So I would love to see another captain at Inter when he's done. I don't have any problem with him staying. I just don't consider him as one of the best keepers in the league in the way that many other Inter fans do.
It's interesting you say that about... there's a lot of people calling for Donnarumma to be given the armband, and that's one of my reservations, is that a goalkeeper as a captain can be quite difficult, because the ideal is probably like a centre midfielder where they're, you know, authoritative in the middle of the field and they're orchestrating that way. But yeah, I have my reservations about just giving
Donnarumma... Has to run 60 metres, you know, to shout on the referee and...
And I think it'll be Musa, to be honest, who replaces Handanovic. He seems like the guy, and it's a bit like Rodrigo De Paul there at Udinese, the kind of, you know, outgrowing that club and will probably move on.
I think both of them are really good. Yeah. I have, that's my dream signing. I think Rodrigo De Paul, any team he joins, he will do very well.
Up until last summer, I had an anti-De Paul agenda, because what it was the newspaper saying that he's 40 million euro player. And I was like, that's not right. He's not a 40 million euro player. But, you know, he does keep getting better each season, like when you watch him. And I think if we're looking for like a hard-working right midfielder, he could actually probably do a job for us as well.
With good foot, creates chances. I love that he's fast in transition, because I think Inter... Like Milan obviously has Theo, that's very fast when he goes on the run. You know, he takes usually past one or two or three players and goes. But I think Kessié is obviously also good when he starts gets going. I think Tonali showed against Partizan that when he gets his speed up, he's fast. And I really love to have that kind of midfielder that goes past one, two or three, like Zielinski does at Napoli. Because it gives you so much. And I think De Paul is that guy for Inter. And the problem with negotiating with Udinese is he's going to cost 35 or 40 millions. And if you think that Inter got Hakimi for the same price, that is, you know, had Champions League experience and played at Dortmund and maybe went for bigger things than Udinese will, it's kind of ridiculous. But I think Udinese otherwise will try to sell him to the Premier League, right?
Yeah.
So... It's based on that.
I'd take him as even a Hakan replacement if we can't renew him before the summer. That'd be an ideal replacement for me. And I'd also, again, with Musa, Donnarumma doesn't renew, that'd be another ideal candidate.
Yeah, I think they're both good players. And a final question before we do a prediction and wrap it up. A lot's been made about how, you know, this is obviously the Ibra v Lukaku derby and two top sides and stuff. But I find it funny how whenever things go bad for us, Pioli comes out and he's very much the arm around the players kind of coach. Whereas when Inter have a bad performance, Conte likes to set things on fire. He likes to come out in the press and, you know, deflect the blame away from players by moaning about something, you know what I mean, to get the headlines about what he said rather than the performance itself. What would you rather have? Does it get tiring listening to all these Conte rants?
I think last year was more tiring because I even if I don't always agree with Conte, I can very many times see where he's coming from. And I think this season, it's been very few times where Inter haven't performed well when they've lost. I mean, I think in the Champions League, Inter did some really good games. I think away against Real Madrid when they lost, they dominated the whole game. I think away against Shakhtar, we had probably like 4.0 in expected goals. And, you know, I can see where he's coming from. I get frustrated with him when he starts talking about, you know, Barella and Vidal and Brozovic being tired when he keeps Eriksen on the bench. Like, that's the kind of things that can frustrate me with Conte, because he can say the same thing last year, you know. He's like, yeah, Borja Valero, no, he can't make it in our system this day. And then Borja Valero goes on to play every game from March to June. I mean, from June to August, because March to June wasn't football. But so I think that's what can frustrate me with Conte. And last year, he blamed a lot, you know. I don't know if I'm going to stay, you know, I don't know this and that. That was a bit frustrating because I don't think he had any reason to go crazy like that. I like him when he gets red carded from the sideline because he goes crazy at the referee. Because I think if you have Conte, want him to be fired up, you want him to shout, you want him to be angry, you want him to be in the game. Because that's how, when you feel like you have a 12th man on the side. And if he isn't like that, I get worried. So I prefer Conte to be his shouting self and after the game take the blame. But I don't like when he says things that he should himself improve. Like when we were knocked out of the Champions League, he said something. You know, they asked about his plan B. It was clear Inter didn't have so many plan Bs. And I think he kind of made a fool out of himself because he doesn't handle losses very well, this guy. That's why he's won what he's won. So that's that. I prefer him angry, mad, red carded, shouting, not jumping up and down than anything else.
He said some things where he's basically inferred about the project and, you know, he said things before the January market about how we can't do anything because we don't have the money. After the Europa League final defeat, when he came out and said, I don't know if I'm going to be here, I need to make assessments about how serious the club is and things like that. I think given the reports of Sunning perhaps selling, having some money problems and stuff, he just wants to say, I told you so. Like, things aren't as good as they seem. Or
I think this year, he just wanted to say that, you know, people say that we spent the money in the summer, but we bought Hakimi in February and then we just got free transfers. Because I found that funny as well when people were saying Inter were only going after old players and, you know, Sandro Tonali could have came and Inter went for Vidal instead. But that, I don't think that was that. I think if you look at Inter signings, Kolarov and Vidal, the only thing they have in common, except their age, of course, is that they cost zero. It didn't cost anything. They, of course, have big wages, which can, you know, probably translate into a signing of, I don't know, De Paul, if you want to go that far. But Inter, in that way, I think Conte said that. And I think Conte, more than saying, I told you so, wants to say, if we manage to pull this off, don't give the owners anything, because we're the guys who made it, not only him, but the group as well. We're the guys who actually, without any help, because I think he, and I agree with him on one thing, I think Inter last year, if they would have got Dzeko, they would have won the league. I'm 100% sure that the amount of goals and points that Dzeko would have brought would have been enough to go and win the league. You don't, of course, you don't know if it would have been that way, but I think he was the only one when he came that thought we can actually beat Juve and win the league. And I think he's kind of frustrated with that, because he's kind of at war with Juventus, and, you know, him and Agnelli obviously don't like each other very much, and same with Paratici and Nedved probably. So I think he's feeling a kind of frustration that this team could have been winning earlier and easier if he would have just, you know, I think he exaggerates with wanting players and stuff like that. But it's kind of embarrassing that Inter, you know, has three strikers and, you know, Sanchez isn't scoring goals. So if Lukaku is out for a long time, or if Lautaro is out for a long time, Inter has no option that is on the same level. And that's not good enough for a club like Inter that wants to win the league and go through. So that frustration, I can understand. I just don't agree with the timing and the way he says things. But I think he's been quite good the last few months.
I think with Conte, you want a bit of Conte in your manager who comes out to the press. And yeah, sometimes he singles out players, but sometimes it can do him good when you've got Pioli coming out after a horrible defeat to Spezia, sort of like calm and relaxed. You want him to have a bit of fire in his belly and single players out a bit instead of just being so relaxed. It's not an acceptable defeat to have. So as much as I do love Pioli, I'd like to see a bit of Conte moulded into him.
He was angry yesterday, though, with Stankovic. I could hear him scream at Stankovic to, like, stop insulting Milan's players.
He did it quite a lot, yeah.
On the bench, he's quite vocal, but I mean, just coming out sometimes, he needs to show, a bit more passion. Not to say that he hasn't got any, but just like a bit more, like Conte shows it, like that he does genuinely care about his results.
I think you're the coaches, right? I think they are in ways. Like I hate that with Ranieri. I think you guys lived that with Montella when they came out after the loss and were laughing or smiling.
Yeah,
they probably smiled a second, you know, and probably no one noticed. But in these days, that's a photo, it's on Twitter, and then everyone is angry. So I totally get that, you know, you want to see that, because I can sometimes, even if I don't agree with Conte, I can just appreciate that he's so sore loser, you know. His eyes are black, he can't speak, he doesn't make any sense, he's just, you know, angry. And even though he's ridiculous at times, I can appreciate that, because he's kind of feeling like I'm feeling. And as Zlatan, if you put a, you know, my video on Zlatan after a game, he will give you that. He will give you the anger, you know, the emotions, the stuff. So I think you appreciate that as a fan.
Like the Mourinho thing as well, I think it's actually part of its mind games. So Conte knows what he's trying to build. And when there's been a bad defeat or whatever, he's quite clever in coming out to the media and throwing, call it a hissy fit, I don't mean it like that, but showing anger, showing passion and stuff, because all of a sudden then the headlines become about him and about what he said in the press conference rather than the performance, rather than the result. And that's what Mourinho's
doing. But Mourinho was amazing at that, at Inter mostly, and even a bit before. But people, I think, seen as it with Mourinho, and also when they don't win, because that mentality is based on winning. It's a bit like Zlatan, you know. The guy is almost 40 years old, and if he doesn't win, people are just going to laugh at his lions are not humans and stuff like that. But that's the same with Mourinho. It's the same with Conte. They are funny to hear when they win, but the second they start losing, they seem ridiculous.
But you can accept the hissy fits as such from, like, Conte, Mourinho, because the winners, they've won it, so it's just where they are. And if that bit of the game comes with it where they'll throw a fit after the loss, then you've kind of just got to accept, haven't you? Because, you know, in the long run, it might end up being beneficial somewhat.
You trust them, don't you? Right, yeah. I'm eager to wrap it up. We were only going to do half an hour, but it's ended up being a belter. Predictions. I'll let you go first, Sia, because, yeah.
Yeah. So if I do anything else than saying a win, everyone is just going to say that I was too careful. But yeah, I have to go with 2-1 just for the fun of it. But then, I really think this is a good game to become a draw, because I think both teams would enjoy it. Like, not enjoy, but Inter would stay top and Milan wouldn't fall behind. I think it is a good derby for a draw. But because I am an Inter fan in this podcast, I have to say a 2-1 win. So that's the official one.
Yeah.
I think a draw would be a good result if Inter getting a couple of yellow cards for the key players after the next game, where Milan can sort of capitalise on. But I said it on Sunday and I'll stick to it now. I'm going to have to say 3-1 Milan. A few years ago, me and Ollie went to the derby and all week I was saying Milan will win 3-0 and they did. So all week I've been saying Milan will win 3-1. So I'm hoping to keep that going.
The hope for us is that this is probably the biggest derby since 2010-11 season, when obviously we wrestled the Scudetto off Inter, and there was not as crucial this time around, but there was a massive derby towards the second half of that season where we won 3-0 when Pato scored inside a minute. And the feeling is that if we were to...
on the bench.
Yeah. Feeling is that even if we, come into this game as sort of the underdog or whatever, if we find a way to somehow win this game, then all of a sudden the media agenda, everything turns positive again. But, I've let you two go first because I'm going to give a head and a heart prediction, I guess. My head says that this is going to be one of those where there's so much at stake that it's probably a draw and the two teams cancel each other out and it could actually be a pretty bad game. But my heart says that it's going to be very open and it's going to be two teams that actually want to show what they can do. They want to send a message. And I think if that happens, I think we'll lose 3-0. I have to say it, I'm going to get slated for that, but I have to get it on record in case it ends up happening, because I just don't think that it would be the right game for us to play expansive, to be honest. I think for everything that we've mentioned about the isolation and everything, I don't think it'd go well. I really don't think it would go well. So yeah, it's rather negative note to end the podcast, but Sir, it's been an absolute pleasure. Thank you for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
Your Twitter at is...
Yeah, Chef. So it's going to be difficult, but you might just tag me or something.
Yeah, I'll definitely tag you and we'll put it in the description as well. And yeah, Jan, thanks for joining us.
Yeah, good to be on again. I'll see you someday. My Twitter is at UK_AC Milan.
Yes, I've been your host, Ollie Fisher. You can find me on Twitter at Ollie Fisher. And hopefully we'll record on Sunday night, having been completely proven wrong and the city is red once again. Thank you for watching, everybody, and we'll catch you in a few days' time.
Conti, bella palla per Rebic, Rebic Ibra, Rebic, 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 il tiro, gol!